This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's Russ White.
I'm Russ White for MSU Today with Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon for our summer update on all things MSU. Let's start with the latest URC report, which we will remind our listeners is the University Research Corridor, a partnership between MSU, the University of Michigan, and Wayne State University. You always release a report at the Mackinac Policy Conference, which was in late May. Attracting, Fostering, and Inspiring Talent for the Global Economy was the title of the report this year. And what are those key findings in the report that you'd like Michigan citizens to focus on?
I think fundamentally the report underscores that talent is the key to the future. And talent that's competitive any place in the world. The report indicates that in the 18 to 24-year-old, 26-year-old category, we're going to have about 100,000 fewer people in Michigan by demographic projections in 2025. So that does put an enormous pressure on institutions that were built for larger numbers, a pressure that we need to have much more success out of our K-12 system, and also a pressure that we need to continue to worry about importing talent. And the report suggests that contrary to mythology, talent that's imported into the state does stay in the state at a higher proportion than I think people recognize. Not perfectly, but a higher proportion than people recognize. But it's partly this sort of people deficit that was created by the demographics and augmented by the recession that we have to worry about for Michigan. I think the second major piece of the report is that 70% of the jobs will require some form of post-secondary education. That doesn't mean Michigan State, but you have to think about the ecosystem of higher education, post-secondary education in Michigan, and be sure that ecosystem is addressing the future needs of the state, not simply the shortages of today. Because if we keep trying to figure out that we have three less pipe fitters today, and that's what we really need, then we're into too much of a short-term mentality. So we have to have both. So the report underscores the world of ands. The final thing that the report tries to underscore is that we live in a networked world. And so it's not simply the MSU people who live in Michigan. It's the MSU graduates around the world who find a way to network with people in Michigan as you think about importing talent to the state, importing jobs, importing their companies, even though they may still remain personally, let's say, in California or New York. And I think we're proving that those networks of ambassadors, as we're calling them, is a valuable aspect of the state's economy. We just have to not see it as just who's here, but how that network works around the globe.
In a related matter, President Simon, you continue to move MSU toward producing more T-shaped professionals and recently hosted a successful conference on the topic at MSU. Remind us what a T-shaped professional is and what came out of the conference that you think advanced the concept.
Well, I keep reminding people that Michigan State was founded to create T-shaped people in the new terminology because it was designed to blend the theoretical and the practical, to connect the learning of the community with the learning that happens beyond the borders of campus, and to be able to have students continue to explore what it meant in the terminology of John Hannah to be a citizen scholar. And we've just called it a global citizen scholar, and that really is a way of thinking about this T-shaped individual. And what we know from employers is that what they might be looking for in that first job to fill an immediate need isn't necessarily the people that they want to have grow with their company. So the T-shaped people, as they're called, they could be S-shaped, they could be any shape, but are really the modern-day manifestation of this old land-grant theory about what we're supposed to be doing as an institution. And what it means is you have depth, if you think about the vertical in sort of one system as well as one discipline broadly defined. Across the top, you have to, in the modern day, have an understanding and some work in multiple disciplines and multiple systems. And then on top of that are all the kind of communication listening, multicultural, all the skills that you hear people talking about today, that were always a derivative of a great education. And part of what the T-shaped idea does is to say, we're going to not only assume that those are derivative, but we're going to have more and more opportunities for students to work in multiple systems and with multiple disciplines. And the blending, if you think about technology and gaming, it's the blending of human interfaces, entertainment, as well as pretty sophisticated technology. So you have to be able to work in these multiple ways, more as a purposeful part of education and not simply something that happens in your life after the university. The same is true with this sort of multiple system. So the internships, other hands-on experiences we provide are sort of how do this skill set, how do these talents that you're developing, this knowledge that you have, work in one industry or another, not-for-profit, then moving into the private sector through internships and other experiences, service learning. And so it's all this kind of thing. And then at the same time, reminding people that these, quote, soft skills, as they're called, are really important and have always been a part of a great education like Michigan State, because that's what employers tell us. So what we want to do is know that we're educating people like that, because that's what our employers say we are. But we've got to be better tomorrow than we are today. So it's not simply taking all of this for granted, but really working with the employer perspective and saying our graduates are really good, they're in demand, we can prove that from the data, but we're going to try to make sure that we're always focusing on the future, because a student that comes in the freshman next year has to be really good, not for 2016 or 17, they have to be really good for 2025. Okay, and that's the focus. It's how we get better in those ways. Some institutions just want to declare themselves good and meeting all the needs. We're a kind of place that says, you know, their data would suggest by placement that we're really good. We just want to be better, and this is a way of thinking about that.
Visiting with Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon, our summer visit on MSU Today. And President Simon, you recently announced that MSU's power plant would stop burning coal by the end of 2016. Tell us more about the goals and progress of MSU's energy transition plan.
Well, always, if you go back and look at the energy transition plan, people assume that because we just didn't make an announcement the first day that we weren't committed to sustainability. And it's easy to make an announcement and not worry about how you do it, and how you do it in a way that doesn't add cost to students, and do it in a way that increases actually the reliability, because people's life work here depends on the reliability of our power supply. And if you think about it that way, it's in that commercial, a lot of that is priceless and can't be replicated and just simply pulled out of a box. And so when we thought about this and have been working with it over a long period of time, we knew that we needed to have reliable and predictable supplies of gas. So part of that was simply getting two gas lines into the campus so that if something happened on one side of us to the east, we had a way of turning to gas on the west and being able to keep the power plant running. Because the argument for coal always was the pile was there, and if all else fails, you'd be able to use the coal. This way, we've solved that problem. The decision to expand the substation, to bury all the lines underground, was not only to do FRIB, but to give us another source of energy and reliability. The power plant, the plant will remain the anchor of all of our energy strategy. It won't go away. And because we need to generate, we've saved tons of money by generating steam for heating that nobody notices. They only focus on the electricity part of it. And our electricity supply had gotten out of balance with our heating needs. And so by putting the plant back in balance, burning gas, doing all these other things, we've essentially created an envelope of greater reliability and greater sustainability. And we're going to add to that then additional work that people will see over the coming weeks and months about how we can add alternative energy to our mix in ways that give us lower cost in this mix of how you balance the plant and take advantage of things like the substation at night, where the rates are lower, instead of running the substation during the day when the rates are higher and using solar during the day when there's sun out. And those are the kinds of very nuanced plans, along with the continued commitment to enhance the built environment. So we know that no matter what we do with the supply of energy, we got to worry about energy efficiency in our buildings, in the lights we put in the ceiling, and we're going to continue all of that work. So it's a multifaceted effort that really worries about all those dimensions of cost, reliability. Sustainability is one piece, instead of saying this is our sustainability strategy and this is our cost strategy. That's a classic MSU solution, and we're just working on it. There are some who are touting their energy footprint by buying an array like in North Carolina or something and saying, gee whiz, we're producing electricity in North Carolina. Isn't that great? But the energy we're using in Washington or Arizona may not be energy that's related directly to the campus. And it is, it counts because you get credit for all of this. But we wanted a solution that people could see, and understand, because they can learn from it. And you add that to the biodigester or, you know, the greenhouse, all the little things we're doing, what students to learn from this environment and be a demonstration project for other communities.
President Simon, the MSU Alumni Association is transitioning from a dues model to a donations model. It's a little bit inside baseball, but can you explain the significance of the transition to Spartan alumni?
Well, I think that the Alumni Association and you're sort of the idea that it's a connection for life didn't make a lot of sense with paying dues. I think it does make sense when you're paying dues to your local club and they get to do things. But it was sort of confusing. If you're a Spartan for life and we're part of that connection, then what do your dues go for? Okay. But we also see the Alumni Association, these beginning activities, as a way of encouraging people to begin their contributions to Michigan State in talent as well as financial. And that got kind of confusing by whether you were in the Alumni Association or you're a part of our donor club. So this sort of moves it all together. It goes back to, if I listen to Roy and his story about leaving Michigan State and beginning a contribution with $50. Well, it's a lot different to have a contribution of $50 that might build, because you're then making a commitment back to the institution than paying dues for a service that you may or may not use.
And related to that, our Empower Extraordinary fundraising campaign is underway, launched last fall. Remind our listeners why MSU needs to raise private dollars and what are some of the priorities of the campaign.
Well, obviously as we look at the people around the world we want to compete with, and it's easy to see that on the football field, and you think about what's in everyday press, the need to attract talent in today's great universities hinges on your capacity to recruit and retain people with chairs. We're one of the lowest, if not the lowest, in the Big Ten. It wasn't a part of our history. Those are funded by endowments. So the goal of 100 new positions that are endowed was a part of the campaign to recruit and retain the best talent. The same goes with endowed scholarships, because if we look around our peers, we know the cost is important. I could cite the data that would suggest that even though our tuition may be viewed as high, our proportion of students leaving with debt is very, very competitive to other institutions. The amount of average debt is competitive. But scholarships provide both two things. They provide a way for us to attract students because they're being offered scholarships at other places. But they also give, at moments of time in a student's career, the hope that they're really important. And by us investing in them and getting them over those humps, whatever they might be, they're going to make a bigger investment in society.
And President Simon, sexual assault at campuses like Michigan State have been in the news. What would you like to say about that?
Well, I think what we know that whatever label you put on these extraordinarily traumatic sexual encounters, that one is too many. One is too many. And we're working in lots of ways, both to try to improve and better understand the regulatory requirement around all of this, but more importantly, how do we create a community where every one of our members worries about someone else and is able to help them through spots that an administrator can't see, both to report if that something happened to them, to support them through the process of dealing with these traumatic experiences, and at the same time preventing them. Because Spartans helping Spartans will help prevent that. So it's a multifaceted effort in very, very difficult times for the students who are involved. And what we want to do is to try to continue to change and model best practices, continue to listen to our community, including the Sexual Assault Task Force that had a series of recommendations that we received last year. We've restructured investigations. We're going to restructure the office that does the programming around the compliance aspect. We're asking our students to do things like sponsor the hunting ground that I think had a profound impact on particularly male students. And we're asking people to continue to work with us to so that we're, you know, implementing best practices. But again, you could go back to the trauma around the student who is experiencing this. No matter what label you have, we have to reach out and try to make sure that their time at Michigan State is as positive as possible, even though that has been an extraordinary traumatic experience. And that's a difficult sort of line to walk sometimes, but we're going to do that in the best we can, because every Spartan is important and their experiences are important to us.
And President Simon, Bill Gates recently blogged a man without a degree on the importance of gaining a college degree. Your colleague Hunter Rawlings at the Association of American Universities had a recent opinion piece in the Washington Post about how college is not a commodity and shouldn't be treated like one. Again, your overall thoughts on this issue?
Well, I think for us and for the AAU-type institutions, it isn't just simply checking a box where a degree is today's skills. It has to be a degree that grows with you throughout your lifetime and pays dividends to you, to your community, to your company, over a long period of time. And we believe that, you know, whether you call it a T-shaped person or call it this classic World Grant Scholar that we've been using for a very long period of time, it's that aspect of education that becomes really important. And as it becomes saying that you need post-secondary education to be an auto mechanic, or you need post-secondary education as part of being a member of a plant, that's true. But the world needs a gradation of educational experiences and people who are educated in different ways. And I think Hunter's op-ed piece, what we're trying to do with T-Shape and Global Citizen Scholar, is say that we have an important role to play in this ecosystem of talent. And it's not one or the other. If we're going to be competitive as a state, competitive as a nation, if the world is going to be a better place, we have to have people educated in this way as well. And we shouldn't devolve to the least common denominator, because it might be the most inexpensive way to do things.
What else is on your radar for the summer, and maybe a couple of things to look forward to in the fall or next school year?
Well, I think we'll see the continued evolution of Neighborhoods 2.0 and the programming that goes with student success. The Healthy Campus Initiative will begin to take hold for all of us, because it's important not simply for a lifetime. It's important as we try to bend our cost curve around healthcare costs moving forward. So it's one of those great pieces that has multiple values. We're going to continue to work on the sexual assault, sexual harassment issues, and add to that the concerns about what you would call microaggressions and what we're knowing about better understanding those. I just bought a book for my core team called Whistling Vivaldi, which is about the experiences of an African-American, well-educated male and his encounters to help us better understand some of the issues of microaggression. We've already out ahead of some things on police and cameras. But it's a continuing concern as we think about the world around us. But again, I think that the core of being a Spartan is about your sense of community, your sense of responsibility for one another, the need to avoid stereotypes, the need to engage with people. And we're going to do that imperfectly. We're going to bring 10,000 new people into this community in the fall. They're all going to come from different places and different backgrounds, and we're going to learn and grow together. And that's going to have some rough edges. But when you go to commencement at the end of the year and you see the product of an MSU education, you feel pretty good about what you've done. And that's what we have to keep remembering, that we've got to sort of start all over every fall. And then you add to that, the continued progress of FRIB and the new work on the capacity to do big data, and the little list goes on and on. So we encourage Spartans to pay attention to MSU Today, click on those stories, and try to learn more about the institution than simply the part that you're most familiar with.
President Simon, thanks so much for again sharing your insights with us on MSU Today.
Well, and thank you, Russ, and your team.
That's Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon with our summertime update. And please keep up with her at president.msu.edu. And I'm Russ White for MSU Today.
This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
Sing our love for Alma Mater and thy praises, MSU.
This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's Russ White.
Governor Snyder recently announced a 30-year strategy for sustaining Michigan's precious water resources. John Allen directs Michigan's Office of the Great Lakes and spoke with Kirk Heinze about the report titled Sustaining Michigan's Water Heritage.
One of the ways we came into that title, I'll just start there, is really looking at water in its totality and all the things that it does. So we've really hit four major themes: how water plays into the economy, how water plays into culture, how water plays into society, and then obviously the fundamental piece, how water really supports healthy, clean systems and ecological systems. So I think one of the surprising pieces is how integrated that all is. It's not just about algae, or it's not just about invasives. Those are critically important, but it's also about how people see themselves in relationship to this resource, recreationally and industrially as well, and how those all have to work together.
Well, in that report, and I haven't studied it as thoroughly as I'm going to, but I mean, you really step out and make some projections in terms of specific numbers. One has to do, of course, with the big topic of the big issue, and that's the algae in Lake Erie and the phosphorus issues.
Right.
But I mean, you've come out with a very specific recommendation.
We have. We looked at a number of programs that had gone both in Ohio and operating at the regional level, Great Lakes Commission, and also with the Water Quality Agreement, and really looking at a 40% reduction of total loads of phosphorus, dissolved and soluble phosphorus into Lake Erie. We think that's our best estimate, our best understanding of where we need to take reductions of phosphorus from all sources. It is something we'll have to revisit in 5 years and 10 years and
right.
20 years
constant
to make
monitoring.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Constant monitoring takes that adaptive approach over time. Mm-hmm. But we have made that commitment. The governor's made it. We made it again in Quebec City just this last week with a number of other states and provinces.
What are some other things in the report, some other key recommendations?
Well, obviously, thank you. Obviously, one of the big pieces that we need to keep focusing on, the state has an aquatic invasives species plan. But we, just because the state has that plan, we reiterated that in the water strategy. You can't have a water strategy and not take a look at biological. We look at it as biological pollution. the invasives that we already have here, 188 or so in the Great Lakes alone, have really had some devastating effects on the lakes, whether that's seabrook quagga mussels, the lamprey, Phragmites, all these different species have really changed the system. So we're keeping a very vigilant focus on any number of activities, both at the state level and at the regional level. Invasive species is something that we have to address, and we have to go as fast as we possibly can.
On the other side, the business development side, you deal with recommendations regarding something that's very positive, and that's water-based tourism.
Water-based tourism is a big issue, both recreation, fishing, boating, beaching.
Right.
I think I just made that word up. But all those things are critical. It's really the pure Michigan side of the story,
right,
how important that is, not just for the people that live here and play here, but the people that come here. We're also seeing an uptick in cruising and in recreational in cruising. Cruise ships are coming into the Great Lakes. The Great Lakes are being really looked at as a worldwide attraction, and we're going to have to do more to build on that. But the underlying basis, as we started with, you have to have good, clean water and healthy beaches and good infrastructure to support all those pieces. You can't have the increase in tourism and people, good places to play, if your beaches aren't healthy.
A component of that tourism dimension is, and all this talk in Michigan about becoming the trail state and et cetera, but increasing water trails. What are we talking about when we're talking water trails?
I'm glad you asked that one, because we have had a focus, the governor has had a focus on becoming the trail state. What we're adding is the water side of that, whether it's on the river, connecting some of our rivers for canoeing and kayaking, but it's also in the coast. It's the coastal system, kayaking from one community to another and really building places to put your boat in, to store your boat, to take your boat out. The trail system is best when it's connected, and what we're finding is the more that we work at those connections, the better we are. And really looking at some of Michigan's great icons of either the Isabel or whitewater rafting up
absolutely
in the UP,
oh,
or coastal, coastal kayaking. Yeah. I think all those things are part of Michigan's water heritage.
Well, one thing that ties the commercial and the recreational, of course, are our harbors, and there's a harbor dimension here as well. That impacts tourism, but it impacts much more. It impacts shipping.
So on the harbor and commercial port side, and we make some distinction, harbors often being sort of the recreational place.
Ports being the commercial side.
And ports being the commercial. And there's overlap, but we've made a commitment to both. Michigan is a water place. It is based on water commerce as well as recreation. Both of those need to be healthy. They need to be supported. We have to look at not just dredging in the river mouth, but we have to look at where sediment comes from. So we're not just digging sediment out at the bottom of the river, but we're thinking about the watersheds and how we're making sure that sediment doesn't get in the first place where it's not healthy. So it's really, again, about connecting the hydrology, connecting the communities from one place to the next, realizing that what I put in the water here shows up downstream. What somebody put in the water upstream will show up in my community. This is one way to look at that. It's not just my patch. It's not just what flows in front of my house or my community, but it's what happened above and below me that's really important.
John, we've talked about this before, but everything that we've discussed, all of these different areas, you would get consensus among most people that these are all good things to do. You also have the big question mark. How do you pay for all this stuff?
I had a feeling you were going to get to that question. It is a critical question. However, what we wanted to do to start with is really having listened to people of Michigan and really trying to articulate what it is our hope. So we've tried to lay out a series of things that said, this is what we want Michigan to look like in the future. We did call the question on funding, and recognizing that long-term durable funding is important for Michigan to say, this is how we're going to meet those goals. So I don't have the final answer for you. What we're going to do is set up a process by which we're going to look very deeply at some of those funding issues, look at opportunities both for self-funding within the state, where can that revenue come from, what do we want it to look like, are we building capacity for the future. The only other option is to hope somebody else does it for us. And we've heard in Michigan pretty loudly that, A, people love their water, and they love the things that means to them, both economically, ecologically, socially, culturally. However, we also have heard that we need to grow our own capacity to tend the systems that we say we love and not hope that somebody else will do it for us.
My guest is John Allen. He's the director of the Office of the Great Lakes. Yeah, I think probably, too. One thing I always liked about good strategic planning was you don't ask the financial questions first. You get the vision out there, and then you figure out how to fund it later. You don't want those financial questions to get in the way of creative thinking.
We wanted to set what we heard was the vision, not our vision, but what we heard
right.
from people all across Michigan is what they really desired, what they said they loved. We didn't ask them what they think about or only what they do, but we asked people what do they love and how does that, what's important to them. Think about putting the Rapids back in Grand Rapids. Think about Alpena and they're embracing their maritime heritage, mm-hmm. the riverfront in Detroit. But that plays out in every community in Michigan. Those will all need resources and efforts. Some of those will come from the community. Some of that may need to come from the state. Clearly, the federal government always plays a role. And what we now try to do is parse out where are those collateral pieces that help us drive the vision now that we've said that we believe and have.
Well, another more pragmatic question, and you alluded to it when you talked about the federal government, but all the different agencies and organizations that are passionate about the Great Lakes, the nonprofits, the federal government, the state government, your office, all of this going forward, how do you coordinate these efforts so that the resources we have are all moving in the same strategic direction?
It's a big question for the Great Lakes. I've often said in speeches I give and conversations that I have that 70% of the Great Lakes are managed through sets of relationships. Yes, we have regulations. Yes, we have, you know, the Clean Water Act and wetlands and coastal programs. But it's really how do we look at this as a set of actors in the basin with our wonderful neighbors in Canada and Ontario and Quebec and our wonderful neighbors in Indiana and Illinois and Wisconsin. So it is about building that point of view that says, here's how we see this system. This is 20% of the world's fresh water. It matters deeply to us. Michigan cannot manage it alone. We manage pieces of it. We understand some, and we lead on many of that, on those components. But how our neighbors see it also matters to all of us.
And an encouraging step here just recently was the governor signing an agreement with Ontario and the state of Ohio regarding Lake Erie, talking about coordinated efforts and partners.
Well, I actually signed two, and you're referring to the summit just recently held
in Quebec.
Quebec City.
Mm-hmm.
This is the third summit that we've held with the governors and premiers from the Great Lakes region. It's a way for Governor Schneider to really push and drive leadership on these issues. He actually signed three agreements, one specifically on the algae question in Western Lake Erie Basin, reducing it to 40%. Another one on further harmonization of aquatic invasive species. Mm-hmm. Those are not things that stop at Michigan's
right.
border. And the third agreement that he signed was to really have the governors and the premiers all sit together as 10 partners and really look at managing the system, whether it's maritime, invasive species, trade, tourism, making sure our borders and goods flow back and forth across those borders that really enhances the economy. Those are the things our governors and premiers are focused on, and that is through a series of conversations that say, yes, we see the world similarly.
This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
That was Michigan's Office of the Great Lakes Director John Allen talking with Kirk Heinze about Michigan's 30-year water strategy. To read and comment on it, visit michigan.gov/water strategy.
Greening of the Great Lakes, inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's Dr. Kirk Heinze.
The Michigan State University Museum just observed International Museum Day, and the theme this year for the International Council of Museums is Museums for a Sustainable Society. Here to tell us what that means and to give us a snapshot of summer exhibits and activities at the museum is Laura Halu, Interim Director of the MSU Museum. Laura, always great to see you on Greening of the Great Lakes.
It's great to be here. Thanks, Kirk.
Well, the theme this year couldn't be more germane to this program, Museums for a Sustainable Society. We've talked in the past about what museums do in terms of sustainability, but tell us what undergirds this theme.
Well, this is a really great theme that we can attach ourselves to because, you know, underneath it all, museums are just a great space that connects people, that presents current topics that we have a stake in, that sometimes are problem-based. And what we find is our exhibits can be a platform for exploration and discussion. We may not always have the solution or the answers, but bringing together people in a space like this where it's all about learning, discovery, exploration, and dialogue, that's what's going to get something happening.
Well, as we've talked in the past, MSU Museum for years and years has been doing things that are related to sustainability, whether it's environmental, cultural, social, what have you.
Sure.
What is, for the international group, the international organization mm-hmm. to acknowledge that, is that like putting greater emphasis on sustainability in some way than you've done in the past?
Well, I think it's an acknowledgement that this is an important issue and that museums really can step into the fore as kind of these catalytic agents where discussions can happen, exhibits, conversations, symposiums, all those kinds of things that bring people together. Can really grow out of a museum context.
Well, a year after the warmest planetary year on record, I mean, it couldn't be a theme more germane to some of the problems that we're facing.
Absolutely.
Tell us a little bit, back to MSU here, tell us a little bit about some of the things you've got going for the summer, Laura.
Okay, well, apropos of that theme, mm-hmm. We're in the midst of a year-long focus, which is not just at the museum, it's university-wide among many of the cultural units, a year-long focus on arts and culture in China. And our major exhibit in the main gallery right now really kind of grapples with this sustainability issue in a lot of ways. So we have this photographic exhibit that we worked on with the School of Journalism and the Knight Center for Environmental Journalism called Seeing China. And there are six contemporary photographers that are looking at kind of that clash or that tension of industrialization, urbanization, change, issues impacting the environment, issues impacting preservation and heritage, and how we kind of live in modernity, but also respect our heritage. So we've got all of these issues kind of at play, and it's been a really fun exhibit to have because it's certainly very visually powerful, but it also drives home these really, really serious issues. And of course, they're not limited to China. It's just maybe magnified because of the scale, just the massive scale of development that's happening there.
Well, it also seems, based on this description, it embodies and reflects some of the research that Michigan State scientists like a Jack Liu, for example, have been doing in China in many of those areas that you mentioned.
Absolutely. One of the most dramatic examples in this exhibit is the Three Gorges Dam project. There are just so many superlatives involved with that. You know, just one of the largest engineering construction projects that ever happened to produce hydroelectric power. But at the same time, displacing, 1,500 villages, towns, and cities, over 1 million people along the Yangtze River. So that's a really, really dramatic example of how we're trying to balance the need for energy and moving forward, but also our life ways.
Laura, putting this exhibit together and talking with colleagues and researchers, et cetera, around the globe, or maybe even in China, do you get a sense now that China, they talk a lot about being leaders in the Green Revolution based on all the issues that they've got over there. Do you get a sense that there's a definite commitment over there to begin doing the right things from an environmental standpoint?
Well, I haven't been there myself, so I'm sort of reacting based on the exhibit and the materials that are coming to us. But it seems to be so. I think there is a growing recognition that issues surrounding the environment, habitat, biodiversity, and those kinds of things are really, really important and can't be, you know, cast away for progress in this rush toward building.
My guest is Laura Helou, who's the interim director of the Michigan State University Museum. Laura, moving from China to, let's talk a little bit about birds and dinosaurs.
Okay, sure. Yeah, this is another...
I'm not sure that's the smoothest transition.
Thanks. <but you're> not... Works for me. This is another exhibit that we're working on that's part of our thematic year in China. And the nice thing for a museum like us as a museum of science and culture is that we're not restricted to the art aesthetic side. So we're able to flex a little bit and look at the natural world. So we have a couple of curators, a paleontologist and an ornithologist, who have worked together to create an exhibit called Feathered Dragons. And feathered dragons is this term that scientists often use to when we're exploring that link between dinosaurs and birds. So this is a really, really intriguing exhibit. It'll be opening this summer, and it'll go all the way through the fall.
Feathered birds.
That's right.
What a creative. What about the, do we have a Great Lakes Folk Festival coming up?
We do. Mm-hmm. The Folk Festival is August 7th through the 9th. And that'll have a little bit of that sustainability flavor in it, too, because, you know, we have this green arts marketplace that always is featuring recycled and upcycled materials. So it gives us a way to kind of look at the creative way that artisans are reusing and adapting materials in different ways.
Well, that's been successful for many, many years. What kind of a turnout are you expecting this year?
Well, weather permitting.
Weather permitting,
it always comes down to that. We're expecting 80, 90,000 people over the 3 days. We've got 21 hours of programming Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So we've got lots of activities to take in, music and dance, children's activities, storytelling, presentations, demonstrations, the crafts, and, of course, the ethnic foodways.
Laura, talking about sustainability, you mentioned children. I think it's important to note, and I'm not sure that we've discussed this in the past, but so many different age groups come through the museum. Different school tours come through. But you do tours right on through the summer, even after the school years are out, right?
We do. It's just a myth that MSU shuts down in the summer, right?
Totally.
Right. It's an exceptionally busy time for us, and it's just a different busy. It's a different pace. We have lots of school groups, lots of families. We intersect a lot with the camps and programs and conferences that are happening on campus during the summer. So it's a busy, busy time for us.
Laura, is there anything that's going on this summer that we haven't touched on that you might like to mention? I mean, you mentioned a lot of different and cool things.
Well, we do have a little bit of construction happening around campus with the steam tunnel
replacement project,
which is happening right front and center in front of the museum this summer. So
you've actually used that as an opportunity to create an exhibit?
We did, yeah.
That's pretty cool. So tell us about it.
Okay, well, it seemed like if anybody was going to do something like that, it ought to be a museum. So yeah, there's this giant hole in front of the museum, right? No parking lot, but this massive job site. So it's a point of curiosity. So we just figured there's a story to tell here. People will be curious what's going on. So we talk about, we worked with infrastructure planning and facilities, and we talk about campus infrastructure. What does that mean? The systems of roads, communications, heat, steam distribution, communication systems that all keep campus humming. And what is going on here?
Yeah, all those cables and pipes
exactly,
and things that are underneath
exactly.
There's sort of been a trend on campus in recent years where if there is some kind of a construction project or it's near a site of a former building or something of that nature, that we've been using that as an opportunity to educate people about those sorts of things.
That's right. The campus archaeology program is always out doing some explorations year-round. Yeah.
Well, again, all the listeners out there who have either past visitors to the MSU Museum or if you've never visited, lots to do this summer. I've been talking with Laura Halu, as she is the interim director of the MSU Museum. If you want to get more information on any of these programs, exhibits, etc., just I would Google the MSU Museum.
That's right.
All right. Laura, thanks again for being on Greening the Great Lakes.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure.
This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Greening of the Great Lakes, inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's Dr. Kirk Heinze.
Well, it's that time of the year when we promote the Michigan Energy Fair, a wonderful annual event for those of us interested in energy conservation and renewable energy. The fair is organized and hosted by the Great Lakes Renewable Energy Association. To give us some of this year's highlights, we welcome back to the program John Sarver, current president of the GLREA board. John, welcome back to the program.
Yeah, thank you, Kirk.
It's fair time again. Tell us about it. When is it? And give us some highlights.
Yes. Yeah, it's going to be at the Ingham County Fairgrounds again down in Mason. The last weekend in June, which would be Friday, June 26th, and Saturday, June 27th, 9 to 5 each day. And we will have a reception and banquet that Friday night. But we have some special activities this year. One is we've hooked up with the Michigan Electric Vehicle Association and the Michigan Tesla owners, and they're going to have their electric vehicle show at the fair on Saturday. So we expect to have about 15 vehicles there, electric vehicles, and some Teslas, so people can talk to owners and do some drives. And the other thing that's brand new is we're going to have a kickoff meeting for a new organization we're forming, the Michigan Solar Users Network, which is going to be an informal group of solar owners. And so on Saturday, June 27th at 11, we're going to have this kickoff meeting for the group and celebrate solar and tell solar stories. And
and hopefully it's a bright, sunny day when you kick this off, right?
Oh, yes, yes. of course, we need a nice, sunny day both Friday and Saturday.
You know, John, I drive a Chevy Volt myself on the electric vehicles, but I'm hearing some things about the Teslas. They're doing a major nationwide outreach in terms of charging stations and things of that nature, but they're working on battery technology that's quite unique and quite sophisticated.
Yeah, Elon Musk, of course, just recently had the big announcement about their Powerwall, that their battery storage. Since they're in the business of making batteries for their electric vehicles, they're also diversifying into battery storage for home use, of course, which would tie into the solar systems.
John, tell us a little bit about the Great Lakes Renewable Energy Association.
Yeah, GLREA is a nonprofit that was established back in 1991. The Michigan Renewable Energy Fair is our big event of the year, but we have a number of diverse activities related to education and training and advocacy with a focus on promoting renewable energy. Of course, we support energy efficiency because we say efficiency first, and then you look at solar and wind and geothermal.
In the 14 or 15 years you've been doing this fair, I think maybe, is this, correct me if I'm wrong, it's the 15th this year, or are we on the 16th?
No, I think we're on to 15. I think you're right, yep.
What are the biggest changes you've seen in renewable energy over those 15 years?
Well, it's really become almost mainstream now. You know, early on, of course, solar systems and wind systems were very expensive, and it was kind of like for the innovators and kind of those people who like to be the first to do something. Now the costs for solar electric systems have gone down so much. They've gone down 50% in the past few years that really now it's become much more mainstream. So now, of course, our organization, one of our main missions is to get that word out to folks. And of course, the fair is an excellent opportunity for folks who have thought about a solar system or maybe are now just starting to think about it, because we have 14, 15 workshops each day, and we have 80, 90 exhibitors there, a lot of them in the solar business. So you can go around and talk to different solar installers and ask questions and go to workshops, learn about solar energy and a variety of other topics too, of course.
Have you noticed a difference in the type of people or the people who come to the fair over the past 10 to 15 years?
Yeah, because again, I think solar or geothermal energy efficiency has become much more popular. And so we're seeing more of the general public coming to find out how they can basically save money and help the environment at the same time.
A lot of folks always wonder about the startup costs for, say, a geothermal system or a solar system, and sometimes aren't aware of the fairly rapid return on investment. Any general comments about that initial investment?
Well, yeah, you know, it varies a lot, of course. But it has, like I said, for solar, gone down significantly in the past few years. I always tell people if they're going to invest in a geothermal or solar system, you're making a large investment in your home, a long-term investment. So it wasn't that long ago that we would be talking to people about 20-year paybacks, but now we're talking about under 10 years. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it depends, again, on the size and your specific situation. But one thing I like to mention to people now that is really kind of new news is that research has shown that if you invest in a solar system, it will add to the value of your home. And so I know some people think, well, 10 years, my goodness, maybe I'll move in 5 years. Well, basically, research is showing that if you did, let's say, change homes after 5 years, you would recoup your costs when you resell the house anyway.
It's interesting. Research shows that because we've had a couple realtors on the show in the last year or so that say they say exactly the same thing about resale values. When you invest in your home, you can actually, that investment pays off when it comes time to sell the home. So
yeah,
very consistent.
And that's true, I think, for geothermal systems, energy efficiency. The general public has become much more sophisticated about the value of these sorts of investments.
Well, again, it's the Michigan Energy Fair. It is Friday, June 26th and Saturday, June 27th at the Ingham County Fairgrounds in Mason, Michigan, just outside of Lansing. I've been talking with John Sarver. He is the president of the Great Lakes Renewable Energy Association Board. John, always great having you on the program.
Yeah, thanks, Kirk.
That was Dr. Kirk Heinze with Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. There's more online at mlive.com/environment.
For listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. To hear the show again, click on the radio tab at WKAR.org and scroll to MSU Today every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock on AM 870 WKAR.